A listener note, this story contains adult content and language.
Today, Danny Ray Johnson is a Kentucky state legislator, but his story goes well beyond the bluegrass. In the first chapter, we told you about the titles he's given himself. He calls himself the Pope, and sometimes the Bishop. The term Pope is usually used for the head of the Roman Catholic Church. We talked to some religious leaders who said it's unusual for a preacher to call himself the Pope. And they say bishops are usually ordained or appointed Christian leaders. Rarely does a person give himself such a title. But there is one title Danny Ray Johnson has that he didn't give himself: Kentucky State Representative.
The guy is totally just a manipulator.
I've noticed that sometimes he gets his facts messed up.
He was belligerent. He was really, really drunk.
He's right there where he can do the same thing again.
He was the strong suspect.
Everybody's talking about the seventh son in the whole wide world. There is only one. I'm the one. I'm the one. I'm the one. I'm the one. The one they call the seventh son.
You're listening to The Pope's Long Con, a five-part investigation from the Kentucky Center for Investigative Reporting and Louisville Public Media. I'm Jake Ryan, and in this story, you'll hear from me and my colleague, R.G. Dunlop. Danny Ray Johnson was elected to the state legislature in November 2016 on the coattails of Donald Trump. He billed himself as a modern-day conservative hero. We've told you about Johnson's rise to political power, how he used lies and distortions to get the votes he needed to beat his opponent. Now, let's talk about where he came from. Here's R.G. Dunlop.
On a Sunday in early June, preacher Danny Ray Johnson gave a sermon at the Heart of Fire Church in Louisville's Fern Creek neighborhood. Nothing unusual about that. Johnson preaches there almost every Sunday. Most of his sermons are streamed on Facebook. But in this one, he added some news. He was being investigated by a pair of reporters.
All kinds of things. I had some folks here yesterday asking me about some phone calls they had received from investigative reporters.
It seemed likely he was talking about us.
Amazing that folks want to know so much about me, you know.
And then he said this.
I know that if you're like me, if you start trying to tell people how you got to where you are today, and you begin to try to tell them all the things you've been through, I think you'd be like me, just better to leave a lot of it out. I don't want to even try to explain it. I don't want to try to tell you. You'd never believe it if I told you so.
We didn't believe it, so we went looking for the truth. But Danny Ray Johnson wouldn't talk to us, so we flew to his hometown, Bastrop, in northeast Louisiana.
I thought you were supposed to say clear prop. What's the matter with you?
When we got downtown, we saw a large dead snake baking on the hot sidewalk.
Holy moly!
It's dead.
You reckon?
Yeah.
I'm not a big snake guy.
A block away at City Hall, we met the mayor, Arthur Jones.
Hello, hello. How you doing?
Sir, how are you?
Jones is 71. He grew up in Bastrop. He remembers the days of segregated schools. He also remembers a time when jobs in Bastrop were easy to find. Now, many of those jobs have disappeared. These days, 4 out of 10 Bastrop residents live below the poverty level. Barely 1 in 10 has a college degree.
We are living in one of the poorest areas of the United States.
This is where Danny Ray Johnson grew up. Remember, he bills himself as a former White House chaplain, 9/11 first responder, and as an ambassador with the UN. But when you ask the mayor of Bastrop about local celebrities, Johnson's name never comes up.
You know, you're talking about people like Willie Parker played pro football, Calvin Natt played with the Utah Jazz, Bob Love played with Chicago.
But no Danny Ray Johnson. At Bastrop High School, the only trace of Johnson we found is his graduation picture in the 1979 yearbook. He has a blonde mullet. He's grinning. He was voted neatest in the class. The book says he was in the school's rock band, the history club, and the journalism club.
Okay.
We leave the school and head down State Highway 139 to Ouachita Parish and the Swartz First Assembly of God Church. Gerald Lewis has been the pastor here for 50 years. He's cutting the grass.
Hey, bro. Y'all want to come in?
Well, we don't want to stand out here in the sun.
This was Danny Ray Johnson's church. Johnson says he started preaching as a teenager. We ask Lewis what he remembers.
I don't know if I ever heard him preach or not.
He didn't preach here?
I don't remember him ever preaching behind the pulpit. Well, he sang. He's a good singer.
On Sunday?
Uh-huh. Wednesday? I mean, we had Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. He was very involved in the church, and he did well. I mean, I have nothing against Danny. My memories of him at that time was he was a great young man, you know. I considered him like a son. In fact, he was in my son's marriage ceremony.
But one day, Johnson was gone. Lewis says he never came back to the church. He doesn't remember why.
No, he wouldn't have just left here and went to another church.
Lewis says he always thought Johnson wanted something bigger than Bastrop.
Danny always had these dreams of doing something big, you know. Here he goes again writing. Danny just didn't get in there and work like he ought to. He wanted to go out and mingle with the people like a celebrity.
With lots of unanswered questions, our next stop is to see Johnson's parents.
He grew up right here.
This house right here?
Right here.
Oh. We're a couple of reporters from Kentucky who showed up unannounced asking lots of questions about their son. Jerry and Charlene Johnson are understandably guarded.
You know, I'm just looking you in the eye and telling you, I don't know what you want to hear.
Say what you want us to tell
you. You know, I don't know what y'all are trying to pick up on.
They say they're still close with Johnson.
Oh, we're close.
Telephone close.
We're very close, but but when you live that many miles away, you know what I'm saying. You just, it's not like one living right next door to you, you know. You miss out on a few things.
They tell us more about one of Johnson's most curious claims. It's in the very first line of his biography on the church's website. It says Johnson was healed of blindness at age 7.
He was just shooting a BB gun, and it, what did it do, glance off?
It ricocheted back and hit him in the eye.
Hit him in the eye.
It was bad. The white and pupil ran together.
It was red.
His mother carried him to the doctor and also carried him to the revival that was going on, and the prayers that went up, and he got healed of the blindness.
He sure did.
So you all think it was the Lord healed him of the blindness?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, it certainly was God.
It's not totally clear to us exactly what happened to Johnson's vision or how it healed. We do know Johnson went through some rocky times after high school. He was married, had a kid, got divorced 3 years later. He had some money problems and filed bankruptcy. He ended up in Kentucky in 1985. He started working at a church just south of downtown Louisville, and in 1987, he married his current wife, Rebecca Johnson. Most of what we know about Johnson's early life in Kentucky is from court documents, police records, and interviews with officials and people who knew him. And what we found tells a very different story than the one Johnson tells about himself.
Shortly after he got to Louisville, Johnson landed in jail on his birthday. Court records say he cooked up a plot to torch his own Cadillac for insurance money. Police found the car shortly after midnight on October 18, 1985, Johnson's 25th birthday. It was a brown 1982 Coupe de Ville parked near the Ohio River. The tires and wheels were gone. The car had been doused with gasoline inside and out. When officers happened to pass by, they saw two people trying to run away. Once in custody, they said Johnson had given them $200 to burn up the car. They said he told them they could keep the wheels and tires as a bonus. Johnson had left the Cadillac in the church parking lot and gave them an extra set of keys. Then he went out with other church staff to celebrate his birthday. Shortly after the party ended, early the next morning, Johnson was in a police cruiser heading downtown. At first, he said he hadn't given anyone permission to drive the car. It must have been stolen. He had no clue. He even filed a stolen vehicle report. But when police read him his rights and told him his co-conspirators had confessed, he came clean. He'd willingly handed over the keys. He'd paid to have the car destroyed. he was hoping to collect on the insurance because he was about to go broke. Johnson owed more than $10,000 on the car, which also needed repairs totaling thousands more. This wasn't the first time he'd had money trouble. Remember, he'd filed for bankruptcy in Louisiana several years earlier. Johnson was eventually indicted for complicity to commit arson and making a false police report. He went through a diversion program, and the criminal charges were dismissed. The woman Johnson paid to carry out the plot was a 31-year-old member of his church named Sharon Stubbins. She's now 63. She lives in a modest apartment in southern Indiana. We knocked on her door, hoping to find out what she remembered.
Hello.
Who are you?
Miss Stubbins.
Before he married Rebecca Johnson, the Pope was close to Stubbins, at least in one respect.
You remember going on dates? Where y'all went for dates or anything like that?
I'm not actually certain that we were, like you would say, dating as far as at a restaurant or anything. I don't think so.
Would y'all just like hang out, go for drinks or something like that?
Don't think we did that either.
It was more of a personal, like a sexual thing?
Just hook up.
Yep.
In the last chapter, we told you about Johnson's habit of putting racist posts on his Facebook page. Sharon Stubbins is black.
Was there any sign or indication from him then that about his beliefs about race?
It couldn't have been if he was screwing me.
What?
Stubbins didn't want to talk much about the incident that landed her and Johnson in trouble, but she looks back on it with regret. She hasn't talked to him since they got arrested more than 3 decades ago. But she's heard about his rise to political notoriety and his online racism.
He's just stuck on stupid.
Years later, in a lawsuit, he'd be asked about the car again. And again, Johnson would lie. His story this time, when the Cadillac came up missing, he didn't know what had happened to it. He said it had been vandalized. This time, he was under oath. He'd sworn to tell the truth, but he didn't.
If you believe his claims of greatness, Danny Ray Johnson pops up at major moments in history, like Forrest Gump. He's always there, right in the middle of things. Sometimes, he says he served in positions that didn't even exist.
The jury in the Rodney King case has delivered its verdict, and not one of the 4 police officers seen on videotape beating Mr. King a year ago is guilty of using excessive force. They've all been found not guilty.
In 1992, Los Angeles was on fire. On his website, at rallies and in campaign videos, Johnson said he was there in L.A. trying to defuse the violence and setting up so-called safe zones.
Setting those up the day before the Rodney King riots happened, that's something God did just by destiny.
The Reverend Dr. Cecil Murray really was there. At the time, Murray led the First African Methodist Episcopal Church of Los Angeles with a congregation of nearly 18,000. During the riots, he could see the fires from his church. Well, do you know, sir, whether there were safe zones in Compton? Was there any such thing, to your knowledge?
None.
He doesn't remember seeing a tall, blonde-haired white man from Kentucky setting up any safe zones, and he thinks he would have known.
It would be surprising if they existed, and I had no knowledge of it.
We couldn't find any mention of Johnson in the media coverage, and no references to safe zones. Continuing his pattern of alleged heroics, Johnson says he assumed one of the most powerful religious positions in the world, advising U.S. presidents over a period of 20 years.
I served as a chaplain to the White House under Presidents H.W. Bush, under William Jefferson Clinton, and also under George W. Bush, chaplain to the White House.
That would definitely be incorrect.
Gary Scott Smith is a retired college professor. He's written 2 books about religious faith and the presidency. He says there's no such thing as an office of White House chaplain. There's never been one.
If someone said I was a spiritual advisor to several presidents, a spiritual confidant, I had a close spiritual relationship with, that certainly could be true. But to say I was the chaplain to a president would be false.
The individual's name is Danny Ray Johnson.
I have never heard that name before. I think it's safe to say that for the presidents that I've studied, that he was not on the radar screen.
We asked the three presidential libraries. They also said they had no evidence linking Johnson to the White House. Johnson also says he served as an ambassador to the United Nations.
I served as an ambassador with the UN for several years, as the ambassador of peace.
We did some research. There's no such position as ambassador of peace. The UN does have messengers of peace, chosen by the Secretary General. People like cellist Yo-Yo Ma, Princess Haya of Jordan, actor George Clooney, opera singer Luciano Pavarotti, and Muhammad Ali. Johnson isn't one of them. One of Johnson's favorite stories is about his role in the aftermath of 9/11.
It's obvious, I think, that there's a second plane just crashed into the World Trade Center.
This September alone, he told it at least twice at public memorial events. He says he raced to the scene of the attacks. He says he offered prayers and last rites there for 2 weeks.
All of a sudden, I realized that everyone was looking for leadership.
He says he even helped set up a morgue.
And they asked if I ever set up a morgue before, and of course, my answer was no. But would I do it? And the answer was yes.
Storm Swain is a Lutheran theology professor in Philadelphia. She wrote a book about chaplains at Ground Zero.
I would be highly suspicious of that claim. As far as I know, the morgue was staffed by a Catholic chaplain.
She said it's highly unlikely that any civilian, let alone a clergyman from out of town, would have been asked to set up a morgue. He wouldn't have had that authority. And a spokeswoman for the New York City Medical Examiner's Office said she checked with some colleagues who were at the scene. No one remembers Danny Ray Johnson. But Johnson's a regular at 9/11 memorial events. He even talked about his Ground Zero experiences with some Louisville TV stations.
The bishop, who always did his best to avoid funerals, quickly found himself doing nothing but running the Ground Zero morgue.
A beautiful day that turned into something that no horror film or movie could ever produce.
He does have some pictures. One shows him with Rudy Giuliani, who was mayor of New York City at the time. The photos seem to show that Johnson was at least in New York. What he actually did there, we're not so sure about.
I was the minister and pastor that did last rites and blessings for all of those that came out of the towers. I live 9/11 every day of my life.
That part's true. 9/11 is part of Johnson's everyday life. That's because he gets workers' compensation from the state of New York. There's no record of Johnson living or working in New York any other time, so we believe his workers' comp benefits are related to 9/11. How do we know Johnson is drawing workers' comp? He had to fill out some financial disclosure forms when he ran for office in 2016, and again after he was elected. Both forms show workers' comp as his only source of gross income. To be eligible for benefits, you have to have worked in rescue, recovery, and cleanup after 9/11 and have been injured or gotten sick as a result of that work. The disclosure forms don't say how much workers' comp Johnson is getting, and New York workers' compensation files are private. So we weren't able to find out exactly why he is getting workers' compensation or how much he gets. To recap, it's fairly likely that Johnson was in New York City on 9/11. He's got photos and lots of stories. But is he really the 9/11 hero he claims to be? The people we talked to doubt it, and they don't like how Johnson uses the tragedy to puff up his own persona.
I, like so many, am a victim of what happened and what's happened afterwards, not just the thousands that were lost that day, but now the 100-plus a year that die because of all the fallout from the towers at the World Trade Center.
Storm Swain, the professor who wrote the book about 9/11 chaplains, says even the way he talks about 9/11 is unusual.
If you were involved in ministry at Ground Zero, I think that's just fine to say that. But the way that he's presenting it is makes the focus on him rather than on the incident. And most involved there don't make it about themselves.
We're telling you about all these lies and exaggerations because there are so many of them, and about so many different things, from the attempted car fire to the Watts riots to advising U.S. presidents and working with the U.N. Taken as a whole, they raise doubts about whether anything Danny Ray Johnson says is true. And then there's the alligator. In August 2013, records show a Fish and Wildlife officer went to Danny Ray Johnson's home and found a gator in a metal tub in the yard. Its name was Amos Moses.
Named him after a man of the cloth. Called him Amos Moses.
And Johnson rode around the county with a gator strapped to the back of his motorcycle with his mouth taped shut. Inhumane treatment, maybe, but definitely illegal. You can't own an alligator in the state of Kentucky, even if you are from Louisiana. Last year, a reporter asked Johnson about it. He said Amos Moses was living at the Louisville Zoo. Here's Kyle Shepard, the zoo spokeswoman.
Hey, Archie, it's Kyle from the zoo. It's about 11:30. Talk to everybody about the alligator, possible alligator donation. And we don't have any record of that. No one's donated an alligator to us in probably decades, like more than 20. Maybe that could be just an urban legend or something. So anyway, I hope that helps. Give me a call if there's anything else I can help you with. I can't remember what story you said it was for. I'm kind of curious now, to be honest. Thanks.
So what happened to Amos Moses?
State law makes it illegal to possess an alligator in Kentucky as an inherently dangerous animal.
This is State Fish and Wildlife spokesman Mark Maricini.
Whenever we come across alligators, our procedure is just to go ahead and seize them, and alligators are put down.
Is that what happened to Amos Moses?
Yes, it was seized, and it was euthanized and destroyed. The Louisiana law gonna get you,
Amos. Johnson was cited for keeping the alligator. The case was dismissed. From Bastrop, Louisiana, to Bullitt County, Kentucky, and elsewhere, it's clear Danny Ray Johnson is a liar and a phony. In the next chapter, we'll take you into the heart of Fire Church and talk about the empire Johnson's built on blind faith. About 45 minutes southeast of Thibodaux, Louisiana. There's a cat called Doc Real South and his pretty wife Hannah. Well, they raised up a son that could eat up his weight in groceries.
Named him after a man of the cloth. Called him Amos Moses. Sit down on him, Amos. The Pope's Long Con was reported and written by R.G. Dunlop and Jake Ryan. Our producer is Laura Ellis. Our editors are Brendan McCarthy, Erica Peterson, and Stephen George. Music by Kevin Ratterman. You can read this story with lots of extras at kycir.org.